Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeart Podcasts, and how the tech are ya? It's time for the tech news for the week ending on March 22nd, 2024. And last week, I dedicated an entire episode to how the U.S. House of Representatives voted in favor of a bill to force TikTok's parent company ByteDance to either sell TikTok off or face a national ban for the app. And I got a couple of follow-ups on that story. And to be clear, that particular bill still has to pass in the U.S. Senate, which isn't a guarantee. In fact, it's not even a guarantee that the bill will come up for a vote in the Senate before it could be signed into law. So it's not a done deal. So first up, in that episode, I heavily criticized the U.S. government for being far too myopic and focusing just on TikTok, instead of looking at the larger picture in which data brokers collect and sell information from a host of different services and devices and platforms. I argued that TikTok doesn't need to have a parent company that merits the quote-unquote foreign adversary label in order for it to be a threat or a concern. I guess some folks in the House were thinking the same thing, because this week the House of Representatives voted to pass a bill called the Protecting Americans Data from Foreign Adversaries Act. So this bill would make it against the law for data brokers to sell American citizen data to foreign adversaries such as China, Russia, or North Korea, or entities that work within those countries. So it wouldn't matter where this information came from, whether it came from TikTok or Facebook or Google or Apple or any other entity that regularly trades in the zeros and ones that relate to American citizens' information. If this is passed into law, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, will be able to penalize data brokers that are found to have violated the law. And I think this is a modest improvement. It removes that laser focus from really a single company, that being TikTok. However, all that being said, it's still a pretty modest bump. Personally, I don't think foreign adversaries are really the only entities that we should be concerned about when it comes to protecting our privacy and personal information. I think domestic companies can be just as dangerous, like Meta or Google. That being said, The Verge reports that lawmakers behind this most recent act are hopeful that the recent groundswell of support that these measures have had, at least in the House of Representatives, could build momentum to a more comprehensive privacy protection set of laws down the road here in the United States, which, you know, I sure hope that that's the case because it's long overdue. Meanwhile, over at Gizmodo, Thomas Germain has a piece titled Politicians who voted to ban TikTok may own as much as $126 million in tech stocks. So Germain points out that the stock ownership could indicate a conflict of interest with regard to the TikTok brouhaha, that the companies that some of these politicians have heavily invested in are ones that potentially could benefit if something were to, you know, happen to TikTok. Sure would be a shame. Could be that these politicians are not even entirely motivated out of concern for protecting U.S. citizens. As hard as that is to believe, they might not be acting in our best interests, and instead, maybe they're hopeful that by slapping a Chinese-owned company around, they could see their own stock portfolio flourish. I don't know if that's the case, but I will say that once again, at the end of the day, it really doesn't even matter what the truth is, because as long as there is a perception that someone is acting more out of their own self-interest rather than a genuine desire to be a leader and to protect their constituents, well, that's enough to undermine confidence in that person. In fact, Germain's piece in Gizmodo really explores that issue thoroughly. I recommend checking it out. It's a well-written piece, and it quotes a lot of different people who are saying, I'm not saying that these politicians are, you know, trying to engage in some form of insider trading. What I'm saying is this isn't a good look. And unfortunately, it does end up hurting confidence in those leaders and why they are doing what they're doing. And they need to address that. Now, let us turn our attention to the U.S. government targeting another big tech company. This one firmly rooted in America itself. I'm talking about Apple. The U.S. Department of Justice has brought a lawsuit against Apple, alleging that the company has made a monopoly out of the Apple iPhone ecosystem and that the company had leveraged its near-total control over that ecosystem to drive corporate valuation at the expense of pretty much anyone who wasn't directly an Apple stakeholder, including folks like customers and developers. And from a very high level, I don't think you can really argue against that. It's pretty blatantly clear that Apple has done that. They have nearly always been a button-down company that practiced like jealous control over all aspects of its technological ecosystem. Now, I say nearly always because there was a period of time when Steve Jobs had been banished from Apple where things were a bit different, but upon his return, they kind of came back to it. This particular lawsuit cites a myriad of Apple decisions that support the legal accusation of the company being anti-competitive, including the infamous Apple Messages issue. So the difference between those green and blue bubbles and Apple Messages is one of many choices that the Department of Justice says exists solely to pressure customers into buying into and then staying within the Apple iPhone world. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. The DOJ says that Apple has also purposefully limited interoperability with technologies from other companies like smartwatches or digital wallets, which discourages iPhone owners from branching outside the Apple world and kind of corrals them into buying and using more Apple products. Now, I've said that for years, that Apple's very good at building stuff that works great with other Apple stuff, but not so great with working with other technologies. The iPod is a great example. Early on, if you didn't have a Macintosh computer, there was no reason to get an iPod because it wasn't compatible with other types of computers. And even when it was compatible, say like the Windows version of iTunes was so bloated and clunky that it would discourage you from using it. Like it almost felt like Apple was intentionally trying to drive people to abandon whatever other technologies they used in favor of Apple technologies, because then everything worked really well. And so what the DOJ is saying is that the company has continued to do that, and it's doing it specifically in order to decrease competition in the space. Now, there's a lot more to the lawsuit than what I've already said, and I am no legal expert. But on a surface level, it's actually really hard for me to find much fault in the argument. Now, that does not mean that it's going to stand up in court. It might not. And Apple says it vehemently disagrees with the premise of the lawsuit, that, in fact, that this constitutes a monopoly in the first place, and that the company is going to fight the lawsuit. Of course, the fact that Apple recently had to comply with EU regulations that deal with similar issues could mean that Apple is already on its back foot on this matter. Now, I do have another Apple-related story I wanted to mention before we move on with other news. Technica's Dan Gooden has a piece titled "Unpatchable Vulnerability in Apple Chip Leaks Secret Encryption Keys." And as I'm sure you can imagine, that is not a good thing. The chips in question are Apple's M series of processors. I highly recommend reading the piece if you want all the technical details. The piece does go into great technical detail, which I'm not going to do for this news episode. But the challenge of fixing this problem is that the vulnerability is actually built into the architecture of the chips themselves, as in the physical layout of the chip's design. So that kind of thing is not easy to fix. You know, you can't just take the chip in to get an alteration. You would either need to swap the chip out for a different one with a completely different architecture, and that would still need to be able to work with whatever device in question you're switching out of, right? Like, a different architecture doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be compatible with the computer you're using. Or, you know, you have to wait for a new generation of devices that have a brand new chip in them that doesn't include the flaw. Or you got to find some way to patch the issue and try and work around it. And likely any patch you create would really impact chip performance, because the chip would have to find a way to work that is counter to the way the chip had been designed to work. So there are no great solutions to this kind of a problem, and the vulnerability could mean that malicious hackers could steal cryptographic keys from Macintosh computers under the right circumstances, which is not cool. But again, you should check out the article in Ars Technica to get all the technical details. Okay, we've got more news to go through. Before we get to that, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Working remotely? Where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
We're back. So I've got more government versus tech stories to cover. Senator Elizabeth Warren is calling on the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, in the U.S. to investigate Elon Musk and Tesla. This would not be the first rodeo between the SEC and Tesla if this investigation does, in fact, launch. There have been a few tussles between Musk and the SEC in the past, as Musk has shown quite a few times that apparently he sees rules as being something that happened to other people. Anyway, what is the reasoning behind this current push for an investigation? Well, Warren says she is concerned there could be a, quote, possible misappropriation of Tesla resources and conflicts of interest arising from Mr. Musk's dual role at Tesla and X, renamed from Twitter, end quote. This is something that some Tesla shareholders have been arguing for some time. So at the very least, they have said that Musk dividing his attention between his electric vehicle car company that has been down a pretty bumpy road for a couple of years now, and a trash fire of a social media platform isn't really in the best interest for Tesla shareholders. I mean, this was the reason why Musk named a new CEO for X, even though Musk has not really stepped away from X all that much. So Warren alleges that the board of directors over at Tesla is essentially stocked with Musk's buddies and cronies, that it's a Musk-controlled board of directors, and that this is good for Elon Musk, but it's not good for shareholders or for the company itself. One might argue that Musk's compensation package serves as evidence that this accusation has some merit to it. Warren also cites Elon Musk himself, who has stated on X and elsewhere that his desire to gain 25% voting power at Tesla is a very real concern of his, and that if he doesn't get what he wants, he's gonna make them sorry. Not in so many words, but, you know, that's the gist of it. Musk has responded in his own typical way by lobbing criticisms and accusations and insults through his X platform. So will we see the SEC go after Musk yet again? And if so, will the SEC again slap Musk with more penalties? I would say probably, but that's largely because Musk makes it really hard to not go after him. He just seems intent on escalating situations. All right, but how about some positive news related to one of Musk's endeavors? For real, I'm not being facetious here. Nolan Arbaugh is the first human recipient of a Neuralink brain-computer interface system. So Neuralink is one of Elon Musk's companies, and Arbaugh is a quadriplegic who opted into the surgery to have a Neuralink interface implant, and he reports that he can now control a cursor on a computer screen just by imagining the cursor moving around, and he's actually likened it to being akin to using the Force in a Star Wars movie. It's given him the ability to play Civilization VI, which is a turn-based strategy game and one of his favorite video games, and I think that's pretty awesome. So Arbaugh says that the technology hasn't been flawless, it's not without its issues, but that he's been given a ton more agency than he experienced in the past. And I think any technology that increases accessibility and gives folks more autonomy is something that we should really be proud of. And I think it's super cool. We also have to remember that there still are concerns about Neuralink, including ethical concerns about how the company has experimented on animals in the process of developing this technology and that perhaps it hasn't done so responsibly. So we can't ignore that. But I do think it's important that, you know, I acknowledge the stuff that is legitimately really cool. And I think giving folks the ability to have computer access, even if they don't have command of their limbs, I think that's really awesome. Back to various U.S. government agencies that are trying to hold tech companies to task. So next up, I want to talk about the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, as well as the cable industry. So I'm largely drawing from an article written by John Brodkin for Ars Technica. It's titled, FCC Bans Cable TV Industry's Favorite Trick for Hiding Full Cost of Service. So you might remember this has been an ongoing issue. The FCC has argued that cable companies regularly hide tons of fees in monthly bills so that the amount you have to pay is significantly higher than the amount the cable companies advertise. So the company might say, like, this is just a hypothetical example, that perhaps monthly service would cost $49. But this is before all these odd fees start to pop up and it balloons that figure to much higher levels every billing cycle. So now the FCC has mandated that cable companies include the all-in price while they advertise services. The cable company can't cite some stripped-down version only to pull the old switcheroo when it's time to actually bill customers. Instead, they have to say what the full cost is going to be instead of saying, oh, sorry, that was without the broadcast TV fee included, you know, or whatever. Cable companies are ticked off. No big surprise there. Brodkin quotes a lobby group for the industry that says, quote, micromanagement of advertising in today's hyper-competitive marketplace will force operators to either clutter their ads with confusing disclosures or leave pricing information out entirely, end quote. And I just want to say, all right, first of all, what do you mean by hyper-competitive marketplace? That is laughable in the United States. There are tons of households in the U.S. that have little to no choice in providers when it comes to things like terrestrial television service. So where is this competition you're talking about? Unless you're talking about competing with other forms like streaming services, and yes, cable TV is dying out, but it's because largely of the predatory practices and terrible service associated with cable companies. Anyway, these new rules won't take effect for several more months, and there are a lot more processes that are to follow, so you can easily imagine the cable industry is likely to contest this and the FCC's authority to even pass this in the first place, so fun times. But I recommend the article on Ars Technica if you want to know more of the details. Alexandra Alper of Reuters reported on the United Nations adopting a global resolution that focuses on artificial intelligence and how countries must commit to protecting human rights while making sure AI doesn't, you know, go all Terminator on us. Not in those exact words, mind you. So the U.S. is actually the country that proposed this resolution. China co-sponsored it, and those are, you know, the two leading superpowers advancing AI technology in the world today. And, you know, we've seen numerous times in the recent past that the way AI has been advanced hasn't always been in the most peaceful or non-disruptive ways. So this resolution has passed, but it's also a non-binding resolution. So you could make an argument, and I certainly do, that there is a lot of pomp and circumstance going on here, but nothing really of substance. It's kind of like leaders saying, yes, these are things that we should definitely be concerned about. And then that's the extent of it. And everything just keeps on going the way it's been going, which is kind of frustrating if you ask me. I guess once we're all reduced to hiding out in bunkers as the robots rampage overhead, we can scold the various world leaders for not actually doing anything substantial about safeguarding against risks associated with AI, but just, you know, saying we probably should. It's just, man, politics. I get it why everyone hates when I bring it up. It's unfortunate. I don't want to either. It's just the world we live in. So John Wray, the guy who was brought in to help dismantle the bankrupted cryptocurrency company FTX, y'all remember that one, right? John Wray was brought in order to return as much value as he could to investors and former customers of this cryptocurrency exchange. And he has now weighed in on Sam Bankman-Fried's current fate. So Fried, or SBF, as he was known in the crypto community, is coming up for sentencing soon. He was found guilty on multiple charges of fraud earlier, and now he faces up to a maximum of 110 years in prison, though it could be significantly fewer than that. It could be like 5 years if the judge decides. And SBF essentially has previously argued for clemency. He wrote letters that stated his crimes resulted in essentially no losses or harm to customers and investors, and etc. So John Wray wrote in to say, au contraire, mon frère. Yeah, he says that stakeholders have filed claims that collectively amount to $23.6 quintillion. That is beyond a princely sum. The actual estimated loss is somewhere around $10 billion, still an astronomical amount of money, but not in the quintillion range. So there's some discrepancy here. And Ray says that, like, in order to address each claim, there is a significant amount of work that goes into it. So clearly there is a real cost associated with SBF's crimes here. And Ray does not mince words in his letter. He says that while his team has worked very hard to get as much back as possible, it did so while SBF was casting aspersions on their efforts. And moreover, there are plenty of cases where there's just no way to reclaim what had been lost, including, quote, the bribes to Chinese officials or the hundreds of millions of dollars he, meaning SBF, spent to buy access to or time with celebrities or politicians or investments for which he grossly overpaid, having done zero diligence. The harm was vast. The remorse is non-existent. End quote. Yowza, that is spilling the ding-dang darn tea, y'all. But beyond that, Ray also outlined five times he says SBF lied in an effort to ask for a lighter sentence. So John Wray is essentially saying, throw the book at this guy, that the crimes that SBF committed and his continued quest to shift blame to other people show that he doesn't deserve a lighter sentence. So we'll have to see what actually gets handed down. Prosecutors are calling for a pretty hefty sentence of around like 40 or 50 years. So I'm not feeling too optimistic for SBF's chances of getting out with a light one in this particular case. I think the judge might be a little more inclined to lean a bit heavier in this particular example. Okay, I've got some more news stories to get through. Before we get to that, let's take another quick break. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, now we've got a couple of hacking stories that we should cover. So first up, some researchers at Colorado State University uncovered vulnerabilities in electronic logging devices, or ELDs, that are used by the trucking industry. So the purpose of an ELD is to keep track of stuff like the number of miles and hours driven for a run, vehicle performance, and stuff like that, right? It's to be part of fleet maintenance and, you know, oversight for things like drivers and individual vehicles. But the researchers found that at least one type of ELD, and there's only a few that are used by the whole industry, these ELDs are components that are part of larger systems. And while there are a ton of these systems that are in use in the trucking industry, there are only, you know, a few ELDs that are produced. So at least one, maybe more, of these ELDs has a severe vulnerability that can be compromised via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. And it's even possible to do a compromising attack on one of these ELDs if you're just driving relatively close to a truck that's in motion that has a system that has this ELD in it. And once it's compromised, the attacker can do stuff like they can send a signal that would force a truck driver to pull off the road. They can even infect the truck so that it in turn will infect other trucks if they come within driving range. And it's like turning a truck into patient zero for a pandemic, only it's a computer virus rather than, you know, a biological one. And obviously this vulnerability could lead to a situation where an entire fleet could become compromised and then manipulated. It's a huge danger to not only drivers on the road, but also supply chains in general. So according to the researchers, the manufacturer behind the particular ELD they have tested, they didn't reveal which one it was. They said that company is working on a firmware update that could address this problem. But the researchers say other ELDs might have similar vulnerabilities and that all manufacturers should be investigating this so that they can avoid, say, a series of attacks that could have a severe impact on the shipping industry in the United States. Next up are some research hackers who disclosed that electronic locks from Dormakaba have a massive security flaw in them. So these locks use RFID technology. Lots of hotels use this particular brand for their door locks. And the hacker showed that using an NFC-capable device, like even an Android phone with NFC, that's near-field communication abilities, you can clone hotel key cards and use the cloned card to then access a room. Like, you can make a master key this way. All you really need is an actual key card that was compatible with these systems and an NFC-enabled device to send a signal to overwrite the information on that key card. You know, these cards are meant to be wiped and then reused, right? So if you can do that and you overwrite the info onto the key card, then you can create essentially a skeleton key that'll work on these locks. That includes being able to open deadbolts, because while you can close a deadbolt on your hotel room door, typically these deadbolts are also connected to electronic systems so that housekeeping, for example, can open the door even if you've closed the deadbolt. So really the only thing you're left with that can keep your door locked would be something like if it has a chain on it or something similar along those lines, you know, something that you manually use to secure the door. And even then, you know, it's just another level of protection. It's not meant to keep everyone out forever. So researchers had already worked with Dormakaba and told them about this vulnerability, and the company has done an impressive amount of work to replace more than a third of the locks that were out there in the world that are vulnerable to this. But that means you still have around two-thirds of the locks that are still vulnerable, and it could take years to replace most of those, because apparently it's not just replacing the locks, it's updating the entire system. So that includes key cards and the encoders and everything like that. The researchers say that as far as they can tell, the exploit is not currently active in the wild, so that's something at least. But yeah, if you're going to be staying in a hotel, just, you know, keep that in mind. You might want to make use of that safe in that hotel room if you can. Now let's end with some fun news. There's a rumor circulating that Sony is preparing an upgraded PS5 to launch in time for this year's holiday season. So this comes as Sony has said that the PS5 is kind of entering the latter half of its life cycle, which is pretty wild to me. I still don't own a PS5 or an Xbox Series X for that matter. The rumored PS5 Pro should be able to deliver upscaled graphics and provide better performance and frame rates, but there's no confirmation on this story yet. So there's also no firm details to give about this console's stats or how much it's going to cost. My guess is it'll be fairly expensive because Sony has stated that it plans to focus on profit for the last half of the PS5's life cycle. So it sounds to me like Sony's goal is not just to entice folks like me, who never adopted the current generation of consoles, but to also convince people who already own a PS5 to upgrade to the new model. Now, I think to do that, they're going to have to really firmly demonstrate why this new PS5 is going to be desirable. I don't think a boost in graphics or performance is going to be enough, like to say like existing titles will run better and look better on this. I don't think that's going to be quite enough to convince a lot of folks to upgrade. They're going to need to have a decent library of launch title games that really demonstrate the value of the PS5 Pro, if in fact this is their plan. Because without those titles, there's not much of a sales pitch there, unless it's for someone like me who just never got one of the PS5s in the first place. And if I'm going to buy one, I'm more likely to go for, you know, the best version that's out there rather than buy something that's been said to be on the end of its life cycle. And Sony is not the only company that's planning new hardware launches. Microsoft had a document leak that showed that a codenamed device called Brooklyn is a future Xbox hardware. It's like cylindrical in shape, which is interesting. And Nintendo reportedly is preparing to launch a follow-up to the highly successful Switch handheld console. So should be looking at some new video game hardware in the not too distant future. Finally, I have a recommended article for y'all. It's from time.com. It's by Will Henshaw, and it's titled "Nobody Knows How to Safety Test AI," which, you know, it's a bit of a problem. We, you know, we recognize that AI can pose potential threats. That's clear. Those threats range in severity from worrying about something that could cost a company millions of dollars or potentially replace people so that folks are out of a job, or all the way up to like AI powered weaponized systems that could potentially misidentify targets. I mean, there's pretty terrifying ways that AI could potentially harm us. But it's also hard to figure out, how do we test for that? How do we discover how AI could potentially cause problems before we deploy that AI in the real world and just find out through experience? That is an issue. So I recommend checking out that article if you're interested in learning more about that. That's it for this week's news. I hope all of you out there are well, and I will talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.